The future is actually here. And if you haven't noticed, I remember when I was younger, there was really nothing to do other than go to Disneyland. And now at every street corner, there seems to be an experience, an immersive experience, a space that has become one of the hottest spaces in the world. And today I've got one of the top leading companies in the world, the CEO himself of Imagine Exhibitions, who is actually amazing what they do and how comprehensive worldwide, over 40 different types of exhibitions, not including all the custom works, the idea, the designs, all the things they do behind. And we've got the big man himself, Tom Zeller, and he sounds like dollar, but as he said that, I was like dollar, 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 Zeller. And
Down in the holler.
he is a genius at what he does, a creative genius. And by the way, he is the authority into this space. And I would know because I own experiences in myself as well. So he's sort of godlike in the industry. He's got the magic touch. It's kind of like a Disney of some sort, but not Disney in a way that is just globalized. So Todd, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Jay. Thank you. Thank you, Jay. That's way too kind. That's very nice for all that introduction. Thank you.
So am I correct to say that I remember growing up it's like I would go to Disney once a year, once every couple of years, and that was the attraction. Maybe, Six Flags, or I'm from Canada, La Ronde, and there wasn't anything experiential. And now you have a whole category of space. Take me to that transition. You think of what happened and where we are today in the space of immersive experiences.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm really lucky to have been a part of the journey. So I've been doing this for 25 years. I started in live entertainment. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, so not far from Canada.
There's not
And
much entertainment in Cleveland, Ohio, other than the Browns.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, man. It's
Well, that is
this
true.
rock and roll, man. It's
That is
there's a
true.
lot actually going on in Cleveland. And not far is Cedar Point. So got some
Oh.
great roller coasters, always been. But even Cedar Point or Six Flags, or even to some extent, I mean, not Disney, different category, but most of that was an experience. It was a thrill or attraction or some kind of entertainment, certainly no doubt. But I think what happened was an interesting, and I feel like I may be wrong about this, but I feel like I was there, and I started, like I mentioned, in live entertainment in Ohio, and I worked for a company that produced concerts, theater. David Copperfield, one of the clients, touring theatrical productions. And I actually spent many years touring with these bands and shows. And I was out with David Copperfield. And I said to my boss, I said, "Hey, what's next?" And he said, "Well, why don't you go work on that Titanic project we're building in Orlando?" And I'm like, "What is it?" They said, "I don't know. It's like a museum and an attraction, and there's artifacts from the Titanic and actors, and then maybe like a dinner theater, and just go talk to, So the next thing I know, I'm put into this world where it was the beginning of immersive experiences. Like we immersed you in, like you were going on board the Titanic. You got there, somebody greeted you like an actor. You got a boarding pass as though you were, boarding the ship. You went inside. You went in, first of all, you went back in time to when they were building the ship and there was music and smells and, the dock workers were working. And then you go on board the ship and it smells good. And there's everything. It was truly like you were immersed in this thing. And it was the beginning of then my career in this space, which has, like I said, the last 25 years of taking people on a physical three-dimensional journey by recreating these immersive experiences, whether they're in a room surrounded by video or we recreate the Grand Staircase and you're standing on board the Titanic. So I think that was the beginning.
Do you
And
own the
then
company, Todd? Do you own the company or do you work for the company?
at that time, I worked for the company. So
Okay.
I
Now,
started Imagine in 2009. So we're 15 years old this year, but I
right
had.
out a year after the sort of the meltdown. So
Yeah.
was that a hard year to start?
No, it was great. Actually, my first thing out coming out of there really was I ended up moving to Singapore to build a museum. So it was a different time for me. That sort of, subprime mortgage boom blow up, whatever it was, the disaster that all took place didn't affect me all that much in that case. But I think that it's we've definitely seen in the last couple of years. People always talk about immersive experiences like it's some new word. And I'm like, finally, people are paying attention to us. Like we've been this sort of little niche thing on the side, selling tickets as we travel with our Titanic shows or the Body shows or Star Trek or, you know, Hunger Games or whatever, whatever the different shows are, Harry Potter, Jurassic World, whatever we've been running around with. And now people are starting to pay attention. And I think it's because actually I know one of the big reasons is A, you have this experience economy that people have started to recognize over the last, say, 10 years. But then COVID really put it on the map in a much bigger way. And I think it was because everything else was closed. And somehow exhibitions or immersive experiences were able to open at some limited capacity where movie theaters couldn't and restaurants were closed and bars were closed. And so people wanted something to do so desperately that they basically go buy a ticket to anything. And then it was a rebirth. So it was fortunate for us, I think.
And it's also become a space where people are spending a lot of money, right? I went to Arte in Las Vegas, or Arte, which is the South Korean company. And I mean, just massive place and quite cool, very interactive. I mean, it must have cost them a fortune. I think I read something was $12 million to do that. Is it becoming a space where now people have, especially when you're competing in Vegas with the Sphere, like in Vegas itself, you got the Sphere and you got so many, I think 100 different attractions in Vegas. So what does it take to stand out in today's market? And is the risk of what's cool today may not be cool 1 or 2 years later, which then is another reinvestment of costs?
Yeah, always. That's always a risk. I think you want to pick. Are you talking about Vegas specifically?
Let's talk about Vegas and just in general, just because it's Vegas, it's so competitive, and we can go with the rest of the market.
Yeah, I love Las Vegas. Like I've been operating consecutively in Las Vegas for 20 years and started at the Rio, which is no longer what it once was, and have done exhibitions and or attractions in most of the hotels, built the Titanic at, and the bodies at Luxor with my last company, currently have a King Tut attraction at the Luxor. I have a bar and a speakeasy at the Horseshoe, two other attractions there. So I love that city. I think this, I love the city because people are there to be entertained. And there's, you know, 40 some odd million people come per year. I will tell you right now, I do not understand the economics of the Sphere. That those economics are a level where I think you need people like that who can spend that kind of money to drive attractions for others. I don't know how it ever pencils, but that's not my 2.5 billion. So I'm not as worried about
plus, it. Plus. And
but,
you know,
but I'll tell you, I went to it. I was there yesterday and I was also there for you too. And it's a wow. It is absolutely a wow. Will it be a wow in 5 years, 10 years? Yeah, we'll find out. But right now I would say it's a pretty cool thing to check out if you can afford it.
What makes when you look back, what makes an experience? So there's a lot of things that you do, the Titanic, which is branded. Everyone knows about it. There's, you know, Jurassic Park, it's branded. So there's a lot of Hunger Games, like, so there's a lot of branded entities, which I imagine are licensing deals, correct? Now, is it like Jurassic Park that contacts you, or then you say, hey, listen, you go to them, say, we'll put on an exhibit and we'll just use the likeness of this. And then, you know, we do, like, how does the business model work in terms of when you put an exhibition where you travel or you just are hired to put it together?
Good questions. A lot of different ways. In the case of both Jurassic Park and Harry Potter, we got a call from the studio, and they know we're, it's not a very big industry that we're in. You know, we're one of the major players. And so the studio calls when they want to do something, or, you know, they're all licensing deals for the studio. So I won't get into the specifics of the deals, but basically, you know, there's some
probably kind standard of, 7-10%, I imagine, 5
some kind of minimum guarantee versus percentage, right, of royalty or whatever. And that's very common. A few times we've also been hired by the studios to create things, in the case of the Hunger Games exhibition or the Downton Abbey exhibition, where they wanted to create something, we were retained. Because the same thing, we're either taking the risk or we're being, you know, being hired to do the job. And then Titanic actually is not licensed because it's not our exhibition's not been on the movie. It's been on the actual shipwreck of the story. So there is no license. There's no IP license there, which in a way is great because it's one of those unique things like Tut, also something that happened several thousand years ago. You don't have to license for it, but people still know it. So I think, but you asked a really important question, and you said, what is it that makes it? makes one of these things? And there's, I think there's one answer. There's a lot to that one answer, but it's all about the story. It's all about capturing and telling that story well. Whatever the story is, that's why people are there. People want to, you know, when they watch the movie, they fall in love with the Harry Potter movies or whatever. They love them. They know the characters. They want to go live that story. So you need to be authentic to that story. You need to have great guest experience. You need to have good technology. You need to have clear audio and crisp video. But you need to make sure you are true to that story. That's what you're doing. You're a storyteller. And so how you do that, there's 100 different ways. But that I think is core to a great experience, is a great story.
So obviously it's easier to tell the story where people have an idea of what the story is, right? Sure. Titanic, Jurassic Park, Hunger Games. What about something that people don't know about? Let's say, you know, do you have concepts like this? Or if not, if you had to start something now, brand new, obviously you have more business than you can handle. I'm sure you have 1,000 ideas inside your brain. Like, how do you tell a story when people don't know the brand yet, right? Because people may be watching this and say, hey, listen, maybe one day I'll have it, but there's no story, there's no brand, there's no nothing. And all, you know, all they have is an idea. How do you develop a story?
Well, it's a lot easier to tell a story somebody knows, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And certainly it's a lot easier to get, it's a lot easier to get people to buy a ticket to an experience of a story they already know.
That's branding.
Yeah, and that's why you pay a licensing fee, right? That's why and there's so much on IP nowadays. You're seeing so many more people developing different experiences around branded IP because it cuts out that part in the middle. If you can create the story, I had one very successful experience in my life, which was the Bodies exhibitions, which I did for several years.
That's cool.
Nobody, the story is, we all know the story because the story is us. It's a human story. It's about how our body works. But there was the sensationalism of, you know, a skinned, plastinated human body that you could go and literally stand next to that normally you don't get access to. So sometimes that shock helps you tell the story, right? I think that or the historical connection to it. But it's hard. You know, I look at some of these people who are doing these, you know, the big video shows, the big immersive video shows like mm-hmm. the Van Gogh. We did the first touring Van Gogh exhibition experience in 2010. No, 11. We opened it. And we found the woman in France who invented it, took her to Singapore, opened this thing there at a beautiful new museum, and then tried to sort of tour it around the world. And everybody's like, why would we want to look at big video of Van Gogh? Where's the real Van Gogh? People didn't get it at all, right? But it then hit this moment after COVID. It was lightning in a bottle. It was everywhere. It was a hot ticket. It was great. And I know all the people who produced many of them, and I'm happy for all of their success and ours too. But
did
then
they go to bankruptcy though? Didn't they just recently have a bankruptcy?
One of the companies who was involved with one of the many Van Gogh shows had a partnership with another company, and they had a breakup of sorts. And there was a bankruptcy that was involved in it, but I think it was more of a structural procedure than it was a negative thing. But yes, there was a bankruptcy in it. And I think but when I'm watching these people try and tell a new story or try and even tell a story in that format, it's hard because you're making movies, right? You know Steven Spielberg's name for a reason, right? There's a handful of directors that you know in the world by, you know, that you recognize their name, because it's hard to make a great film. And so you need to have quality to make something great. So I think it's easier to do it with when you're going for a mass experience. And also not everything has to be mass to be financially viable. You know, you just have to have a budget and a P&L that makes sense. You don't have to do 500,000 people. Matter of fact, I know people who have exhibitions because they're not good business people. They might do 400,000 people and still lose money. So just because you're grossing, you know, millions of dollars, if you're spending millions plus one, you lose money, right? So it's very important to be smart about the business aspects of this and understand, you know, and I think when I talk to people about me and my business, I always say to them, you're working with me because of the 25 years of mistakes I've made. Like, I know what I screwed up before, and hopefully I learned from it.
So back to my question, could you start a concept, like, or have you thought about a concept? You never really did it, but you're like, if I did it, like, this would be a concept and the story I would tell, just to try to understand, not branded, not, or you just rather just go with the branded stuff.
No. So I have 40 exhibitions. Three of them are branded. So the other shows are all, they're all kinds of different concepts, but there are a lot of them are singles and doubles, right? They're not all home runs. Harry Potter is a home run because everybody knows Harry Potter, right? But for example, I have one example is I have a dinosaur experience called Dino Safari. I made the name. It's called Dino Safari. Now, you might say dinosaurs alone are a brand to themselves because everybody knows dinosaurs. We have another exhibition on Leonardo da Vinci. Da Vinci's not licensed, but he's recognizable.
Right.
That's an example of, we have a bar in Las Vegas called the Cabinet of Curiosities. That's people. Some people know what the Cabinet of Curiosities is. Most people don't, but a Cabinet of Curiosities is basically in a museum. You'd have a large display case that has a variety of things that may relate to the same subject. And so it's sort of a 200-year-old concept in a museum setting. But so we made a bar that way. So I think it's a great idea. People love it when they come see it. You can go to the bar. It's in the basement of the Horseshoe, and you can have an awesome craft cocktail. We have a speakeasy right next door to it. And that Cabin of Curiosities name is a name we're developing. We're taking a long path to develop that brand and that name. So it just takes a longer period of time. But again, then it comes down to marketing these things. And so when we come into market with these different shows, we have, you can never be done with marketing. So of course you're buying digital ads, you're buying out of home, you're buying radio, you're buying all the normal advertising channels. But you're also doing partnerships. You're partnering with the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and they're partnering with the library, and you're partnering with the pizza shop, and you're partnering with as many people as you can who have access to people's information that is first party data. And you're trying to talk to them and get them excited about your story. So marketing is a huge, huge component. Obviously, if you don't have a brand I used to have friends who worked for the Rolling Stones, and they, back in the day before all the digital and everything, they'd put the smallest ad in the newspaper possible and see how fast they sell the show out because that brand was so hot. It's different when you don't have that name. You got to work.
Is that the expectation? People will just set something up and pray and just hope that it's going to work out.
I am often surprised by the amount of people who think, if you just build it, they will come. You have to
be as much as a creative. You have to be more of a marketer.
100%. Absolutely. I think I say to people, I'm on the airplane, what do you do for a living? And I sort of, I'll say a couple of, oh, that's really interesting. And I was like, honestly, we sell tickets for a living. That's our job. Because without the tickets.
That's crazy. I think that is a bang on of probably something people don't know. They just look at the exhibit and it's about the experience and people, which it is. But if you can't get people there, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And then hopefully you can convert those people into great merchandise sale. Or if you have if you have a menu where you can have a food and beverage component or a photography, it's all about what are the add-ons you can do. And at the same time, delivering a great experience. Because at the end of the day, if you don't have a good experience, the rest of it doesn't matter because it's not going to last.
Why do you think Madame Tussauds, especially the one in London, it's like a lineup outside to take pictures next to wax figures, right? And it's not even like seeing the right kind of, how in the world is that even like remotely like you're taking pictures next to a wax figure? So why do you think that's so effective? Are you baffled by that or you get it?
I mean, I think I don't know that they do the numbers they used to do. I'm not privy to that. I feel like it's probably waned a little bit because I think there's probably better experiences out there now. But I think it is tourist locations. So you're spending money in a different way than you normally are. You're on vacation, right? And you're like, what are we going to do with what's going to satisfy everybody in the family? Normally, it's the mom who's making the decision or some woman between the ages of 25 and 54 who's usually deciding where you're going. And if you've got, it might be there's a men in, I'm going to make up a name, but a Men in Black thing that they want to see or a Back to the Future thing or a whatever the hottest recent film is, people want to stand next to a celebrity. It makes them feel... I don't know. It's not my thing. So it's hard for me to get it, but people love being associated with that kind of fame or being next to look, they're really that tall. And I think overall, Madame Tussauds does a good job. They've done delivered a consistent product
Let me ask you a question. When using likeness, right? Whether it's Edison or Einstein or just Oppenheimer, the movie, sure. Do they have to pay At Madame Tussauds, do they have to pay a license to that? Or is there a gray area that's like, you know, because they are public figures and they are, is there like a like you have to pay or can you get away with not paying?
I am not an expert on that subject, but I'll say that I know that certain actors, it's, I think it's the individual that they're paying and they have an agent and they do it, but probably right. You know, some people, Da Vinci, who have, they probably don't have, you know, they don't need to pay him or his estate because he's over 500 years gone. But I'm sure there's a royalty that's paid or a fee, a license fee.
Yeah, especially when you use that just in general, too, because there's so many, I think there's so many gray area with AI. What about, why do you think, and because you're a Vegas guy, and I did my first CES.
And,
yeah, this year, first time, you know, because trying to take a look at what's latest and greatest. And first of all, I was shocked how big it was.
Amazing.
But then I saw like a lot of people who probably spent a lot of money for booths and nobody would, they're not selling anything and they're not even like approaching, like, you know, I expected like, you know, hey, we spend a lot of money here. We better try to get as many people. Like I have to ask, do you have a card? I'm like, like, but it was weird. Right. So let me ask you a question. Why do you think CES, because it's an experience part of it too, but it's an exhibition. Why does it do so well? Is it because it's the latest and greatest things, or is it just because it's a holiday for people to get it to Vegas? Or
I think it's both of those things, but it's kind of like, you know, the world's fairs of years gone by, right? There, it was to show off the latest technology, and for the big brands like the Sonys and the Microsofts and the whoever out there, they've got cool new LED panels to do whatever. But it's all that little innovator guy that you got. I know a lot of my industry goes because we're looking for a new way to tell a story. We're looking for a cool way to do something we haven't been able to do before. And there's that guy who invented, you've seen those like fans that spin around that make it look like a 3D picture.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's noisy too.
But it's new. And so I saw somebody in a very novel way the other day, actually inside the sphere, they've got this big screen. It looks as though you can see through it, but they've got a like,
Yeah. Like it looks like little helicopters for people. But you know the problem with those screens? If you take your phone, right?
Yeah.
It does, right? Because it's like a helicopter, which is crazy. I don't know how. If I take a video of a helicopter, it shows in slow motion. Maybe you could explain to the people. I've always wondered, but it's the same thing. So it, in person, it's impressive, but it doesn't take good pictures.
That's right. It's frames per second, but I took that same video the other day in front of that thing for exactly that purpose. No, but that's why people go to CES. It's to be by like-minded creative people, whether that be like you're a super, you know, focused software engineer or you're some super, you know, you're a visually creative person, whatever. You're trying to get this new ways around telling a story. That's why the people I know, that's why they go. They want to be a part of the coolest, latest, coolest thing, and they want to integrate it somehow into their world. It's like, you know.
You think there's always going to be a space for people to go take a look at what's the latest and greatest technology or things, experiences? Because that's the car show, right? What's the big hit at the car show? The car that they're never going to do, right? I mean, right?
I hope it's always there because although I'd hate to see it all go into some, you know, metaverse that like we're looking at goggles. Because I think one of the things I like about what we do for a living is the social aspect. You don't always go alone. You're with somebody most of the time. And that I think there's something to that energy in the room, that, you know, sharing of an experience. That's what we want to be together and share our experiences.
So let's go about how you run your business, because 40 Exhibition, tell us how big it is, how many people work for you, how does it work? What is your role as a CEO? Because obviously, like how much, like, and what do you spend most of your day on?
So we have a lot of exhibitions. I am the sole owner of my company. I don't have any investors in the business. I have investors in certain projects, but the staff is our staff. We have, you know, we're about 110 people in sort of corporate wide, and another 200 or so who help operate our locations. The exhibitions we have range, nothing is usually smaller than 4,000 or 5,000 square feet. And the biggest ones are sort of 40,000 to 50,000 square feet, depending upon, you know, the size. We are primarily focused on, I think what we're known best for is our touring experiences, so that we build an experience and we move it from city to city. Now, it might be in a city for a year or 2 years, but our average is sort of 4 to 6 months.
Which you're targeting the locals at that point.
locals.
You get tourists too, right? But you get
When we go to a Chicago or a New York or a Boston or like a major market where there is already tourism, part of our campaign is always focused on that tourism.
And you're doing Harry Potter in Chicago, correct?
No, right now Harry Potter's in New York City, in Barcelona, and in Macau.
I thought it was Chicago at the Hancock building is what I heard.
No, there was a different, smaller Harry Potter experience that was there. It was not related to ours. Ours is a much bigger, more comprehensive show that has all these costumes and props. Right now we're on 34th Street in New York City, right at Herald Square. And then there's four units total that are – well, the fourth one opens this summer, but they're all touring.
And your 100 people corporate, what are they mostly comprised of as organizational wise? So we can understand like how you run, because this is a global company with a lot of things going on.
Yeah. So if you took it into sort of probably six buckets, I guess, design, marketing, operations, retail, finance, and I'll say everything else. And I think they're relatively equally spread out.
There's like the marketing department do the marketing for all of your exhibitions and then the merchandise from all of them. So you don't have little people here and there, like, you know, like disjointed rather than there's a central kind of theme and messaging.
Yeah, we have. So that's a part of the marketing, the brand part of it for sure. We want to try and keep that consistent with all of the different shows. Bigger shows require more people. We always have a local presence wherever we are so that we have like, you know, we have a team. And, you know, if I had a seventh category, it'd probably be just Vegas. But Vegas has all of those parts to it, but it's focused on all of our business out there. But, you know, in Barcelona, we have a team. We have our people on the ground. Then we have a huge local support staff that helps us. But in all the categories I already mentioned, but we are able to keep a pulse on what's happening so we can control that experience for the guest wherever we are. So that, I mean, we also have a whole division of our company who we rent or lease exhibitions to museums. So you might go to your local museum and see one of our exhibitions. You'd have no idea it's us because you just think it's the museum that you're going to, but that's a whole different animal there.
That's where you'll be like, the museum said, we need an exhibit and you create it and they just lease it. So to make it, you change it every.
Yeah. And there's trade shows out there for museums who are like looking for content. And one of the things they do, where do you live? What city?
Chicago and Nashville.
Okay. So in Chicago, you have the Museum of Science and Industry. And
right.
The
Field of course. Yeah.
Right? Two major museums that are, both of them, they both create their own experiences, but they also rent or tour other people's exhibitions. And those are models where they either pay a fee or they pay a fee plus a ticket fee, or they do, you know, there's a lot of different deals. But as an attendee, you're like, you just, if there's a problem, you're like, the museum, if it's good, like the museum did such a good job. And if it's bad, either way, you blame it on the museum. You know, we always know. When we work with museums, we are a guest in their house, so we're always respectful of their people and their visitors, because we know, you know, it's not our place and they're there for the long term.
So Todd, you don't strike me as a businessman when you first started, right? You're much more of a creative and a relationship type of guy, and you've built a global empire, you know, with corporates, 100 people, local. Did you have to sort of learn how to become a CEO, or what was your strategy, or were you always like that? Because obviously you've scaled on a very large scale.
Yeah. I've been lucky to been surrounded by a lot of people for a long time. When I go back to I think my roots of understanding business probably come from my father in some way, although he died when I was young, but he was an entrepreneur. Just listening to him as a kid growing up and the people he'd bring around. But what I mentioned, I worked for David Copperfield. There's one guy in particular who was the producer, who my job was the rigger or the head of production. So I would like get everything hanging in the ceiling or get the show built. And I would go be in the production office, and this guy would talk about the business deals, and I would listen, and he would let me listen. And so you pick things up about why you market, or, you know, when you go out there in the audience and he's the first guy clapping. Because we want to make sure that audience, like how you do it. And so I listened to him, and then I had a great mentor in my next company we owned the wreck of the Titanic, and the guy who was my boss and my partner was a seasoned entertainment guy. And I volunteered for everything, and I, did everything because he let me. So I think, you know, like I said, when I got 25 years of mistakes, I got to make them. And then I decided to start my own company because we, you know, I was able to. And I've just surrounded myself with good, smart people. And, you know, over the years, the people who I can trust that are honest and solid have stayed with me. And then when you scale, you look for more of those people, you know.
Well, what's your greatest weakness as a CEO, you think? The thing that you're not the best at?
I'm probably, there's lots of that stuff. But the weakest,
I don't know. Never been asked these questions.
Sorry?
You've never been asked these questions.
No, I just, maybe it just varies from day to day. There's so many weaknesses. But I think that the thing I could work on the most is probably related to communication, is particularly as you grow a company and making sure you let people, there's a real fine line of letting people, identifying that the person is capable of doing their job and then letting them do it. I've never been a micromanager, but I've had to be a micromanager when you have the wrong person. So I think I could be better at moving on quicker. I tend to want to give somebody a second and a third chance because I want to believe the good in people all the time.
We could tell you're a nice guy. You're like a super nice guy. So like you're
it's burnt me bad.
But that's right. I mean, that's the ultimate. But isn't it the biggest source sometimes is like, I'm sure you've taken people along and you've helped them and you've grown, and then for some reason they didn't show the same loyalty that you did. Have you accepted that's just the way people are?
Yeah.
Or do you still hold hope that, you know, in the end, good will prevail? But it's a different world now. Nobody wants to work. And I'm sure you being a traveling, some people don't want to travel anymore. You know, it's a whole culture now.
It's very true. Somebody said to me recently, one of the younger folks on the team was saying something about how, well, we're being told that you're supposed to move every 2 years because that's our best opportunity for success and to make the most money. And I was like, I don't know what the world's teaching you out there, because I never finished college. I didn't get my MBA. I'm no business genius, whatever. But I'll say that the highest paid person at this company is the person who's been here the longest. So here, I don't know, maybe it's a little different. I would just say, you know, it does happen though. You put a tremendous amount of effort and faith and time and energy and money into people, and then I think sometimes they just blow you off, and that's hard as an owner. I think you've got to continue to reinvent yourself and help people grow where they can, both for them, but also for you. It's not all about them, right? They have to work for the business. That's the business, and they can't expect the business to dictate, for all their goals. But if you find the right, if you continually communicate, hopefully they're going to grow with you. I don't know, but they're going to leave. It sucks. And I hate it.
So what do you do? What's your best superpower, but what do you do on a day-to-day basis? Are you the one coming up with all these ideas? Are you the one talking to the Warner Brothers and all these in partnerships? Like what, at this point, what do you do?
I do any major deal that happens here is my responsibility. My responsibility is new business. Also, like I find the next license. I find the next real estate deal that we want to do. I find the next, and I'm most, and actually I never hadn't thought about it until I just thought about it, is find people, senior people that are the right people to help me with that growth. Because as I we're on this sort of, you know, path where we're going up, we have a little plateau, then we go up, we have a little plateau, we go up, we keep growing. And so as we grow, I know I can't do all this stuff. So finding more of the right people most of the people that work, I've known for years and years and years, and we've wanted to work together, but the timing has to fit. And so identifying those people, nurturing those relationships, and then activating those people and then supporting them. I think that's my job. Most of my calls are internal, talking to my people to give them what they need from me. And also trying to keep the pulse of this, you know, ever evolving monster. That's, you know, sometimes it's hard to find the pulse. You know,
what do you think is the future of the industry? Where is it going? We have part AI. Is this immersive screens, which are so hot right now, which are cool?
Yeah.
Is that going to die off? Like, where do you see the future? How do you imagine it from Imagine Exhibitions?
I would say that the future is now. No, the future remains in good storytelling, in good entertainment.
Whatever, no matter what you're saying, if there's a good story and a good fun for the family and all of that, they will come back.
Whatever the format you put it in, right, is whether, you know, if people want to be together, they want to be told a good story that's memorable. They want to be, this is my opinion, obviously, but they want to be, they want a story to tell their friends. They want to drink that bottle of wine because they learned, they met the winemaker and they can tell the story. Oh yeah. When I was in Oregon, I went to the Willamette Valley and I went over to the Bergstrom wine and this Josh, who's the owner, super nice guy, and his wife, Caroline, they're from France. She's from France. And they took, you want a story to tell. Everybody wants that. And so you can deliver that in some way. That will always be the future. No matter how you deliver it, whether it's a giant, like this big screens, none of that stuff is new. It has a wave that's happening right now. There will always be a place for it.
Yeah.
You'll use it to tell the right story. Like when we built Downton Abbey, the exhibition, we wanted to build, I don't know if you know the show, but there's so there's downstairs in the basement, there's the kitchen, upstairs, there's the first floor. We physically built those areas, right? But then we wanted to show all this other stuff. So we built three sides of video, and now we're in France during the war, and then we're in the study, and then we're out in the garden because we could create. So there's a time to use big screens, there's a time to use audio, there's a time to use total darkness. It's all about figuring out how to best recreate a story moment for you that gets you somehow emotionally moved from whatever we're trying to make you do. Happy sets. Disney, you said Disney in the beginning, right? They're the stars of it. Like they sit around dreaming how to emotionally, how to make
but you. They have big budgets more than you and I. So, they do. And they do have budgets. And what do you think about, you know, Disney's a good question about immersing themselves a culture. There's a lot of things on DEI, the woke culture, where, you know, when people go to experiences, and this is my opinion, I don't want to be influenced by something I like or don't like. I'm there to have fun. But now you have sort of like much more views or being instilled into experiences and movies and all that. Do you think that's going to be a future now where people are going to go to a place because it has the views that you want, like the I Love Donald Trump Museum or the I Hate Donald Trump Museum? Or like, is that going to be, because we're so divided and polarized, you think that's, there's a future for that? Or that's just such a small minority, but that's the news talks about it, so it makes it look like it's bigger than what it is?
Sadly, I think there will always be that is part of our future, no doubt. I mean, it's the idea, and also because people can capitalize on it one way or the other. You know, this is a show about business, right? People are trying to make money.
Yeah.
And if I can make money, whether whether you believe in or don't believe in Donald Trump's practices, if you love him, you're going to want one of his t-shirts or his, or whatever the thing is. If you hate him,
polarization sells in a way more still, right?
Of course it does. Of course. Yeah. And it's always going to be part of it. But I think there's also places that are just, you know, full of joy, and that I guess we all choose where we spend our money, and we all choose. I get to choose. I'm lucky. I get to choose what I do for a living. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather, if I can, my goal is going to try and do things that are a little bit less polarizing. If I can bring joy in a way that is, you know, broad enough that any political person could come see it, then I would prefer to do that, because I don't. And also, for the biggest reason is I want to appeal to everybody. I'm trying to.
You want a wide net. Who cares what religion or political thing? But unfortunately, it's weird because it's you know, more than ever, I don't remember it being like that. And so my question to you in terms of you, obviously you built a very big company. Is your job to like, do you want bigger? Do you want more growth? Or you're like, you're big, we're busy? Or what is your aspiration to your growth as an entrepreneur, where you want to go?
Yeah, I think it's always evolving. I didn't know that, you know, if you'd asked me 20 years ago where I was going to be, like I would have had no idea.
Hey, if you said 20 years ago the Rolling Stones would be alive, we would have doubted that as well. Which, by the way, is probably the best show of all shows. I mean, they're amazing.
Amazing show. That'd be good to be in the Sphere too. I think that I am. If you ask my people, they're always sort of trying to be ready for the next curveball I'm going to throw them, because I come back and I'm like, we should do this. And like, yeah. I'm like, no, like now we should go do this or whatever. Like I get excited about about new things. And I think what's happened to me over the years, which I couldn't, you know, it's like before you have kids, you don't know what it's like to have kids, right? You just can't imagine it. So where I am now, I didn't know that I'd be thinking the thoughts I'm thinking about the size of projects I'm thinking, because 10 years ago, they weren't in my head. So I think I'm not done. I don't know what that means exactly. I have a lot.
How old are you?
I'm 51.
Okay. So you're still really, really still young.
Yeah. I think I'm in the prime of my.
And you never took partners. You never did anything. So it's kind of just.
I've had partners in projects, and then I've never had a partner in the business. And I think that's a good way. That's worked well for me. The business gets too entangled. There's so many things. I have lots of different partners on different projects.
Right, right. You're like your partner in this business with me. But did you think the word museum? And this is what I'll say to you, is that there's a lot of places that pop up with the word museum. And the connotation with the word museum is that it's boring, right? And so, but putting the word museum on an experience that may be cool. Does the word museum hurt you, in your opinion, and should be changed, or it doesn't really matter? People will go if it's a great experience.
I think it depends on the experience. The word museum is one of the most trusted words in the English language, which is really interesting. Hmm. So then when you pair it together with like the pizza museum or the ice cream museum, which is an example in recent times that's been very successful. It's just a fun, whimsical thing. It's so funny to see it together, though, the ice cream museum. So I think
it could have backfired too,
for sure. But I think
there are other things with the word museums that have not done very well as well. So I think part of it is that the hook of the setup of the ice cream museum is pretty. It sounds like you wouldn't want to take your kids there, right? So there's right? And by the way, the word ice cream, kind of like, oh, we're going to go there. It seems kind of. You know, but then I could have figured, like, I don't want to see exhibits on ice cream. So it's interesting because it could have backfired.
Yeah. Well, I think it came at the right time. We are in a very visual world right now, right? If you just read the ice cream museum, you might not think, but we're in a very visual space now. So I think when you see it with people jumping in a ball pit down a slide and eating ice cream and candy and kids having fun, then all of a sudden you're like, I want to go there. That looks fun. Or like, there's now a balloon museum, which is traveling around, which has been, you know, I think it's been super successful.
Yeah, it's in New York. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in Atlanta right now, actually. I think it just opened where I am. So I think it can help, and it probably can hurt too. Because there are people who think I've had some concepts over the years that people were like, yeah, can we just get rid of the word museum? It seems boring. But I think sometimes it also, you know what you're getting.
Right. Have you ever gone to other places, like other experiences, like, oh, I'm going to use that in mine, or you're just trying to create something that's not there? Like, are you a guy like, oh, I'm going to do this in mine and mine, or do you think that if people go to yours, they can learn how to do yours? Or are you a bit protective of some of your ideas and concepts? And then do you go out there and try to look at other themes and concepts to say, hey, I'm going to do that myself?
I think everybody's looking at everybody's stuff all the time and trying to figure out what if something works well, how do you do it? And I don't think anybody wants to copy the exact same thing of somebody else, but I think you want to, boy, if that's working, like look at the way that they displayed that piece of art on a wall, or look at the way the media was shown through this thing. I think we all want to make a cool, that's what CES is. It's exactly what CES is. You ask, why do people go to CES? They go because they want to see a cool thing presented in a unique way that they can somehow use to capitalize on or benefit from, or just because they like it.
Yeah, you know? It's fascinating. Last question. What do you think your keys to success when you break out and you meet other people? Like, why have you been successful? And you look at other people in museums who have not, or experiences have not been successful. What is your secret sauce?
Tell the truth.
Like, give an example of something you told the truth that may not have been a good truth. And
just be honest to people. I think you just got it. I've got this little sign on behind my desk here that I bought at some store somewhere, and it's somehow become now the mantra of the company. But, you know, and I tell this to my kids, just work hard and be nice to people. That's it. Like if you work hard, it'll come, you know. It's not always going to come. It's not going to be easy, but you work hard. You're smart about it. You tell the truth. You're consistent. The other thing is, if you owe somebody money, tell them, Like if you say, hey, I owe you $100, it's due next week.
I know. Yeah.
Dude, I got $50. I can pay you 50, but the next day I'll pay another 50 and I'll pay another 50 and make sure you do it, because all you have at the end of the day is your
word, your reputation, credibility.
That's it.
And also, there's nothing worse than people don't do what they say they're going to do. And,
I hate it.
And by the way, do you guys manufacture your own exhibits? Like like a workshop, like a Disney, or do you outsource a lot of the stuff, the building?
So we have a little, we are not builders. We go to companies who specialize in that. But what we do is we have the designers and we're the creators. And so then we'll prototype stuff, but we're not a production facility. Cause then you're like, it's a whole nother business and you have to, as of right now, it's not a business I want to be in.
Maybe it is. Maybe a Monday morning meeting.
Well,
maybe
Monday morning. Guys,
we are in the exhibition building business. I may have just spurred an idea.
There you go. You
can be Go ahead, sir.
You can be my first partner.
Yes, absolutely. I think we'd do very well. You're actually a nice guy. I like nice guys. I have some partners that are not as nice. They don't listen to me, which is nothing worse than when someone has a good idea and people don't listen to you, especially when it was the right idea and it worked. But, you know, I think ego gets into the way sometimes.
That's probably the number two thing, though, when you talk about secret sauce, although I don't know my wife would remember, but you got to listen to people. You have to listen I know that in some of the partnerships we have with some of these studios, they tell us, they're like, you know what was different about you? You listen to us. And I was like, what do you mean? Why wouldn't people you paid attention, and whether we liked your answer or not, you paid attention and you thought about it and you responded because we asked. And there's a lot to be said for that.
Someone who owns, experiences, I will say, the biggest mistake that people made, and I've done this in business, and this is when I got involved, everyone was counting how much they were going to make money and exit, rather than putting like, oh, we're going to do this because you're starting making money and we're going to sell for this. And you really have to go in there and obsess, because what's hot now may not be hot later. And if you count the money, it no longer like becomes like about the customer. Like you said, the story, it becomes about selling, and then you lose sight. And I think that's a big mistake that I think, and not just in this business, but pretty in a business, you can't count the money. You literally have to be obsessed on the experience, on the wow factor. And another part is you have to be in it. You can't manage it from other businesses and trying to dive in like a pelican and dive out, because it doesn't, you know, it needs a lot of love. It does need a lot now, because it changes. I mean, it's the consumer is very finicky, and if they don't like it, the reviews, and you always
sometimes
have to.
You got to lose money sometimes to get there because of that experience, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, a fascinating interview. By the way, I really enjoyed it. I do a lot of interviews, and the soul. And I think you got probably asked questions you never got asked to in terms of the business, which I think a lot of people say, it doesn't matter if it's this or that. I think the lesson I think everyone should take here is tell the story of your brand, the story of your product, the story why you started what it is. And then, you know, create the wow factor. That's really what it is. If people are wowed, they will tell other, they will take pictures. If they're unwow, they will either never go back, tell everybody it was horrible, or leave a bad review.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, sometimes happy people don't go and give happy reviews, right? Unless they're like completely blown away. People unhappy, they like to tell everyone they know. And I think that's
true. We just opened two exhibitions in Chicago at Westfield Old Orchard. We have a Titanic exhibition and a Downton Abbey exhibition. And, you know, always, you know, it's always the first couple of days when, you know, we didn't quite finish something, or we didn't put the benches out, and people are angry about the seats or the signage isn't up to get there. You never need to ask your people what's going on. Just look at your reviews, because man, will they tell you, and it's hard. But that's who you're doing it for, right? I told my team, I laugh about it. Like, look at what we get to do for a living. I mean, we literally tell stories for a living. We entertain people. People buy tickets. They come to us because they want to be entertained, and they're in this experience where we're lucky. I mean, you should go see our shows in Chicago.
100%. 100%. And I think this won't be the last time we talk, because I think this is not just about experience. It's really about business. And there's so many lessons in there. And I think people have to stop saying, well, I'm not in exhibitions. But also, I think, and you'll like what I say, I think people should go twice if they're entrepreneurs. One, to simply enjoy it from the perspective of a user. And then when you go back a second time, look at where it is, where the merchandise is, what are they doing? What are the staff doing? What is their marketing? What are they saying? And I think that's how you learn, because in the end, we're all in the experience business, no matter what business you are. True. Like you're in the business of selling tickets. In your case, is buying your product, like whatever it is, you're in the business of selling yourself or your product.
Yeah.
And I think too many people don't look that. Someone once said to me something conceptual implementation, something that is common as dirt in one industry can have the effect of an atom bomb in another. And that is what Todd Zeller has created. Great name, by the way. I love Imagine Exhibitors. I love your name, by the way.
That's my wife. My wife came.
Is your wife? Well, tell her I thought the name was fantastic.
I was all on all these other ideas. She's like, what about Imagine? I was like, and then I called one of my friends. He had hold music on his phone at the time, and it was the John Lennon song.
I Imagine.
Yeah, I got it.
By the way, you ever thought about licensing that and doing a little
too expensive? Promo
material? Too expensive. Yeah, he's already done it. He's already asked. John Lennon's expensive. That's it for today. Do me a favor. Share this with anybody else to inspire them to figure out the business. Go visit any of the exhibits. Check out his website. It's actually really well done. And finally, and I never thought I'd get, there was a long list. I was like, how am I going to get straight to Todd? And I did it. Tom Brady probably had something to do with it. So thank you, Tom. That's the gift that keeps on giving. It gets easier and easier once you've had Brady three times
there
as well. But this was fantastic. Great business. We'll see everybody next time. Like, follow, share. If you're on Apple or Spotify, please review it. But more importantly, like give the gift. It doesn't cost anything to share. And when you share and someone likes it, it just makes you look good. Like an experience. You recommend an experience, you need to go there as well. We'll see you next time, Todd. It won't be the last time, but I'm definitely going to check out your shows. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Appreciate you, T. Thank you.